Hello, returning happies and new listeners. This is Steve Bennett Martin.
And this is Stephen Martin Bennett.
And welcome to A Lifetime of Happiness. The podcast where we take you on our journey through some of the movies, television shows, and other bits of pop culture that are helping to keep us happy, while hopefully bring a smile to your face along the way.
And today, we once again ask, what's your favorite scary movie? As we take a stab at covering Scream 3.
I see what you did there. But first, my love, what's been making you happy?
Well, a lot of things, but one thing that I do want to talk about is this show on HBO Max that we found called We're Here.
Who's here?
We're here.
Okay.
Anybody that's listened to the show knows that we love our drag queens.
Really?
We do.
We're loving drag queens all over the place.
I know. And so, we'll always talk about Drag Race and things, but this is not that. So, We're Here stars Shangela, Eureka, and Bob the Drag Queen doing a kind of Queer Eye for the small town guys type of thing, where they're going around the country to small towns, interacting with the gay and straight communities, trying to show, you know, we're here, we're queer, get used to it type of thing. And it's fantastic.
It certainly is. It's the perfect blend of drag queens and heartwarming, loving moments and the feels, and the drag shows themselves have been fun to watch. They have some really good standout moments.
And anybody that has not been watching it, do watch it. But if you have, and they were in Selma, and Bob's
hair number was awesome.
Yeah, the wig reveal was one of the most spectacular things I'd ever seen, and it was unexpected.
Yes, and I do love the different faces of the queer community that they're showing. It's not just gay guys, and it's not just lesbians, and it's non-binary people, it's allies.
It's trans people. It's people that,
are figuring things out.
Figuring things out, and some that, you know, need a little help being a better ally.
Yes.
Looking at you, blonde mom on the show.
Yes. So check it out. It's on HBO Max. There's 2 seasons out right now.
Yep, we're in the middle of the 2nd season.
Yes, so check it out. It'll make you happy.
It will. And one of the other things that made us happy is we went to Spirit Fest Sarasota this week.
Is it about cheerleading?
It was not.
No. It was about metaphysical spirits.
Yes, it was about metaphysical spirits. So, you know, there were healers and readers and crystals and just a lot of wonderful things dealing with metaphysical spirituality. And we had a really good time. Some friends of ours went with us, and then we had some lunch after. But it was really lovely, and there was a pretty decent turnout when we were there.
Yeah, and I would say in general, this has been just one of the many steps in your recent metaphysical journey that you've been really enjoying and making you happy.
Yes, absolutely. We have 2 metaphysical stores in town. One is the Pixie Dust Boutique, and the other is Wild Ginger Apothecary. And I took a tarot class from Sky at Wild Ginger that was just eye-opening. And then we recently did a angel healing meditation with Bridget McMullen, also at Wild Ginger. And, you know, both were fantastic. I was really, really impressed with the angel healing meditation as well.
Yeah, so if you're one of the 11% of our listeners from the Sarasota area, I definitely recommend checking it out.
Yep, I absolutely. And, you know, I'm sure we'll be hearing more along my metaphysical journey in future episodes.
Yes, or you can tell us what the future will be with it right now.
Sorry, the spirits aren't speaking right now.
All right, sounds good. Well, then let's head back over to our good friends, Sydney,
Gail and Dewey.
Yes. And Scream 3 was released on February 4th, 2000, with a budget of $40 million and a box office of $161.8 million.
Okay, so this came out my freshman year of college.
Yes. And so it got your $8 or whatever the movie tickets were back in the day.
Which was a big deal for a college student.
Yes.
And we went opening night, opening, you know, like weekend. It was a big deal. The mall was packed. And we got our tickets in advance because it was selling out. And I put my ticket in my right front pocket. And then we were walking through the food court to go shopping for a little bit. And I reached down and my ticket was gone.
Oh, no.
And I realized I had just pulled something else out of my pocket. And so I turn around and these two guys were standing there holding on to a movie ticket. And I walked up, just said, "Hey, is there any chance you guys just found that on the ground?" And I said, "For Scream 3 at, you know, 8 p.m. And they're like, "Yeah." And I was like, "That's mine. I dropped it." And they're like, "Okay." And you could tell that they were excited that they had just gotten a ticket to a sold out movie, but they were nice enough to give it back. But for a minute there, I was like, all my friends are going to get to see this movie and I'm not.
Oh, well, I'm glad you got to see it. And you've seen it once or twice since then, right?
Just a few, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Now, this movie, like the other originals in the Scream trilogy, was directed by Wes Craven, also known for his work on The Nightmare on Elm Street and dozens of other horror movies.
Yep.
And it was written by Aaron Kruger, who went on to do the Transformers franchise, but also did The Ring and The Ring 2.
And he's not related to Frederick Krueger.
No, of The Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
No.
So it has returning stars. Nev Campbell as Sidney Prescott, David Arquette as Dewey Riley, and at the time, Courtney Cox Arquette as Gale Weathers, and Roger Jackson as the voice of Ghostface, and Liev Schreiber as Cotton Weary.
Yes, and we went back into more of where we know them from then and now in our first two Scream episodes, so make sure you go back in our archives and check those episodes out if you haven't already, because we're about to jump on from those two and take the train going forward.
Yep, and new faces this time are Dr. McDreamy himself, Patrick Dempsey from Grey's Anatomy.
Yes, he's Mark Kincaid.
Yep.
Scott Foley, we know from Scandal as well as Grey's Anatomy as Roman Bridger.
Yep. Lance Hendrickson from Alien as director and film producer John Milton.
Matt Kiesler as Tom Prince, and I don't know what else he's from.
I don't either. Jenny McCarthy, who everyone these days on the number one TV show in America, The Masked Singer.
How did this happen?
Me. It was me. She's playing Sarah Darling.
Yes.
Emily Mortimer from Mary Poppins Returns as Angelina Tyler.
Yes. Parker Posey from Best in Show as Jennifer Jolie.
Yep. Dion Richmond from The Cosby Show as Tyson Fox.
And Patrick Warburton from The Tick as Stephen Stone, the bodyguard.
Yep. And this was originally intended to be the final of the Scream trilogy, and you can totally see that, until it was revived in 2011 with Scream 4 and Scream 5 coming this January, which potentially as a new trilogy. So everyone out there, go see it and don't screw this up for us.
So that we can see Scream 6 a couple years from now.
Exactly. Well. That's what I'm saying.
Yes. Now, one thing that you'll notice that makes this movie a little bit differently from the first two is that for a franchise that later, you know, inside the movie is even called Stab because the killer notoriously uses a knife, the killer gets a little more creative this way and there is a little bit less blood and gore and a little more of a focus on the comedy aspects of the, you know, the satire mm-hmm. part of it. And the main reason for that is because it came out in 2000, they had serious concerns about it after the response about violence in media following the Columbine High School massacre in 1999.
Yep. So people that like to do mass shootings and everything like that, you're ruining entertainment for the rest of us.
Yes. So don't do it, please. Okay. Yep. Thanks.
Thank you.
How do you feel, though, this ended the trilogy?
So I'm of several minds on it. So I still think this is a great entry in the Scream franchise. Is it the weakest of the four so far? Yeah, mm-hmm. It is. But that's like still saying, you know, oh, it's the weakest Adele album. Like, yes. There is no such thing, really. And I really enjoy this. I thought it ended well because, you know, a lot of the times in horror movies, we never get, like, they end at, or just shortly after the trauma's done, so you don't realize where your characters are headed off, and so this kind of gives us a nice little farewell to people that we had spent three movies with.
Yes, exactly. And one of the people that was returning was, surprisingly enough, the opening kill.
Which, shocking. So it's Cotton Weary. He has the number one syndicated talk show, 100% Cotton. And he's on the phone with his rep bitching about the role that they offered him on Stab 3 not being good enough because he calls it just a cameo. And then he gets a call on his cell phone, not his car phone that he's talking to the manager on. Too many phones, Cotton. Too many phones.
Yes, and I love how dated the technology at the time was with how bulky and big the cell phones were.
Yeah.
And, you know, the caller starts off as a female voice who's flirting with him, but then it quickly turns out to be Ghostface. But before we get into Ghostface coming back, what do you feel about this as Cotton's future after it ends in Scream 2 with him getting his first big interview with Gale?
You know what? I'm absolutely 100% fine with this because Sydney thought she was doing the right thing prior to Scream 1 with saying, hey, he killed my mother, and he was wrongfully convicted, was spending time in prison. Scream 2, he just wants his day in the sun. At the end, Sydney gives him that opportunity, and he's a hustler, and he turned it into this talk show, so good for you, Cotton.
Yeah, I agree, and as we say goodbye, or as we see a sunset for his day in the sun,
yeah,
Ghostface is tells him that he's in his home with Christine, mm-hmm. his girlfriend, and that he'll let her live if he tells her where Sydney's living. So he starts to rush home.
Right. And what's interesting is, though Sydney gave him that little boost at the end, I doubt they kept in touch. Sydney had zero desire to see Cotton after what happened at Windsor College.
So you don't think he even had her number in his phone?
At all. I think that Ghostface was stretching.
Yeah, grasping at straws, trying to find Sydney.
And Ghostface stalks and attacks Christine while using a voice synthesizer to pretend that they're Cotton, and which is really interesting. Christine is Kelly Rutherford. She had just finished her multi-season run on Melrose Place when she filmed this, and this is before she became one of the stars on Gossip Girl.
Yes, and when Cotton gets home, Christine attacks him, thinking that he was the one going crazy, before Ghostface stabs her in the back and then quickly kills Cotton himself.
So what I appreciate about this compared to the opening kill in Scream 2, so Jada Pinkett Smith is killed in the opening of Scream 2 by the person that she thinks is her boyfriend, and she dies without ever seeing that it wasn't her boyfriend. With this, at least Christine realizes that the person stabbing her is not Cotton. So it makes me feel a little better. I'm sorry they're both dead, but at least she didn't die thinking that Cotton, who she had loved and trusted, was doing this to her.
Yes. And one thing that I find interesting that they set up here, and it ends up being a theme throughout the movie, is how this Ghostface loves using the voice synthesizer. How do you feel that changes the game?
It is a huge game changer. And what was really interesting, this is the only one they did it in. They didn't bring it back for 4,
yeah,
which I'm fine with. But for this movie, it really brought a new depth to what the killer could do.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that. What about also one of the main characters of Scream 2 dead in the first 10 minutes of Scream 3? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, it was a very interesting way to say it. It was an interesting way to say it. Like, this is like all bets are off. Like, mm-hmm. you thought that all bets were off when Randy died in Scream 2.
Yeah.
Like, there's all bets are off here where he's, you know, Cotton's the throwaway murder victim.
And yeah,
and he was in like all the posters and everything, just like how Drew Barrymore was in the first, leading you to think like, oh, okay, he's joined the gang, so to speak.
And I mean, even in the poster for the first Scream, and you see like the kind of see-through face up there with her hand over her mouth. I mean, that was Drew Barrymore's face in that poster. So they're really good at letting us think, oh, this person's going to be a big star. No.
Yes, exactly. So then we get to see, after his death, a little bit of
Where are they now?
Where are our friends from the original two movies?
Well, so Sydney is living as a recluse under a fake name in Monterey, California. Yeah. And she gets home from a walk on a beautiful ranch home in the hills with a golden retriever. And she is very quick to lock the gate, turn on the security system, gets inside, locks the door. There are no windows open. She sets another security system when she's inside. And then she hops online using the fake name to call in as a grief crisis counselor.
Yes, she was working from home before it was all the rage in 2020 and 2021.
She sure was.
Yeah, I think she
was doing it for a different reason, but...
Yeah, I'm sure she would have thrived in the past couple of years of the pandemic doing that.
What, hiding? I can do that.
I can do that. I can work from home. I already have my whole base camp all set up.
Now, Gail is an anchor for Total Entertainment.
Yes, she is talking at a college campus about how to be a good reporter and author. And she's visited by Mark Kincaid, who reveals that Cotton was murdered and the killer left behind a picture of Maureen Prescott, Sydney's mom.
And this is interesting that he came to her because of anyone in the franchise, Gail was closest to Cotton because she wrote a book
from
his perspective, you know, saying, hey, I think he's innocent.
Yeah.
And she ended up being right. And so they really did develop a relationship during that time. So that you can see it on her face that that's not news she was expecting.
Yes. And you know who else wasn't expecting to see that on the news?
Was it Sydney?
Sydney, who drops her whole bag of dog kibble. And while it happens off screen, you hear it drop. And my heart just goes out because as dog dads, we know how hard it is to clean up kibble off the floor.
Yep. And you know how the best way to do it is?
Vacuum.
Oh, I was going to say, Remy, come on, go get some kibble.
Yes, true.
So, but this takes us to what was happening is that they're filming Stab 3.
Yes, we do know that Stab is a franchise from the first movie. From the second movie, they were making the first Stab movie.
Right, there because was a that's sequel. What they went to go see at the theater when Jada died.
Yes, there was a sequel in between that happened off screen that we didn't hear about.
Right.
And then now they're making Stab 3. And on the set of Stab 3, we meet our new mix of suspects and cannon fodder as they're talking about their individual roles as well as Cotton's death.
So I love whenever Milton's like, you don't think that Cotton's role in this had anything to do with his murder? And the throwaway detective's like, he was making a movie called Stab. He was stabbed.
Yes, that would lead credence to the idea that they are involved. Now, what do you think of some of the new actors and actresses like Tom and Sarah?
Okay, so brutally honest, and I apologize to Emily Mortimer. I hated her in this movie.
Yeah.
There was never once where I liked the character of Angelina, and I couldn't tell if it was from the actress or if it was how the character was written. And I wasn't sure. I knew Emily Mortimer these days from a show on HBO called The Newsroom that she did with Jeff Daniels. And I really, really like her on there. So it turns out I do like the actress. So it must be that they made Angelina in such a way that I don't know if we were supposed to dislike her, but I truly did. And she was one of those I was like, nope, they can go ahead and kill.
Yes. I mean, most of the group, like, you feel are just either going to be suspects or they're going to be just killed. Like, none of them really strike me from the first impressions as, like, they're going to join the main group and they're just going to survive and be part of the next movies or whatever. Like, they all clearly were, like, dead, 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 dead. The only one that I thought might have a chance of either being a suspect or being legitimately, like, a big person was Parker Posey's character, Jennifer, because she has such a big role in this as the fake Gail Weathers.
Now, I've always really enjoyed Jenny McCarthy. I her personality, I find her enjoyable. So I actually was rooting for her from the moment I heard that she was in the movie. I was thinking, yay, Jenny McCarthy.
Yes, and speaking of the new faces and speaking of Jennifer, Gail arrives and learns that Dewey's working as a technical advisor for the movie and is also close with her movie counterpart, yes. Jennifer. Now, we see that from their first interaction that things are not good with Gail and Dewey, which is weird because it seemed like at the end of the second that they were going to give it a go.
Well, we assumed that because at the end of the first, Dewey's hollering for Gail, but she's reporting on the murders that just happened at Stu's house. And at the end of the second one, instead of reporting, she hops into the ambulance with Dewey. And we're like, oh, they do love each other. They're going to make a go of it.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on what happened between the two movies?
So, I mean, we do get into it in a, like, between them in a bit that she does have a quest for fame. And, like, Dewey knew in advance what type of person she was, that she wanted to be a successful, famous reporter.
It was 60 Minutes too, Dewey.
But Dewey didn't want to leave Woodsboro at that time. Like, the only reason he was at Windsor College was because of the murders. He wouldn't have left town if he didn't need to.
Yes, and so he does later on reveal that the reason why he's working on set is to try and protect Sydney's identity because the killer is trying to find her.
Yep.
But before we get there, we flash back to Sydney's time on the ranch. Dad is there and still alive and doing well and not locked in a closet. And he warns her about isolating herself.
Well, Dad, psychos can't kill what they can't find.
Yes, she then has a nightmare about her mom, eliminating any question that Maureen is going to be playing a big role in the movie's themes and motive.
Yeah, like, we're hearing more about Maureen Prescott in the first half an hour of Scream 3 than we did in the original Scream in Woodsboro.
Yes.
One year past the death.
Correct. Now, going into the first post-opening kill,
yep,
we meet Sarah, who, as you said, you had high hopes for her.
I know.
And she's at the office and gets a call from who appears to be Roman, and she's complaining about her role as the bimbo who dies second, who doesn't own a gun and dies naked.
And she delivers this really, really well. And I do admit that, you know, she gets there and Tyson leaves with the practical effects guy, and she's there by herself. That office is creepy in the dark.
Yes, it is. It is creepy. But I love, like, how she is so self-aware of herself and her character in the movie named Candy, because, yeah, of course. But it almost made me like her more, because I'm like, oh, she knows what she's doing. She knows why she got this role.
Yep.
Like,
and 100%.
I definitely was rooting for her, but you realize real quickly it's going to go south when Roman uses a new script and Sarah makes a comment.
It's not just a new script. It's a new movie.
Yes, exactly. But one thing I love about that is we talked about in our Scream 2 episode how many different versions of the script were, how many rewrites there were, mm-hmm, all to try and throw people off. And I just love how frustrated she gets at it. Like, she's like, another version of the script? God damn it.
Like, we get a new version every day.
Yes. And it was just funny how they're poking fun at themselves and, yep, breaking that fourth wall. He then reveals that it's not Roman. It's Ghostface. Or is it Roman?
Yeah, and we don't know. And what the tense thing there is, she's hiding, and there's two racks of Ghostface costumes, and she hides in between them, and you're looking, and you're looking, and then one of the Ghostface leans out, and you're like, fuck!
Yeah, of course he was hiding there.
Yeah.
But before he comes out, we actually see a flash of the security guard closing up shop, and she saw his shadow. She initially
thought it was the killer
and hid from it. So
she was 50 feet away from living.
Yes, she certainly was. If she had just went outside,
yep,
towards the person or yelled for help,
yep,
rather than just being quiet and hide, she might have lived. But that is not what happened. Instead, they struggle, and he kills her.
Yeah, he throws her through a glass window and then stabs her. And Gail and Dewey are having brunch in L.A., which is what one is wont to do.
Yes.
And, you know, they go into more of it where, you know, he says, you were just a fame whore. And she's like, you wouldn't meet me halfway. Woodsboro was where you were going to be. And 1 year in Woodsboro is 7 years anywhere else. And at that point, for what they were both wanting, I can see it not working out because they may love each other, but they wanted different things out of their lives at that time.
And I can also see how hurt Gail must be, the fact that he put his foot down and said, I'm not going anywhere, and then here he is in Hollywood.
Yeah, when it was a big deal for her, and he could have gone with her at that point.
Yes. Now, with Sarah dead, everyone realizes the killer is killing people in the order they die in the movie, with Jennifer freaking out because Gail's character is next. And I love
how... They kill me third?
Yeah.
I'm killed third in stab three?
Yes, and I love how upset she is about this fantasy version of herself.
And Kincaid tells everybody, you know, there's different versions of the script. We don't know which one the killer has.
Yes, exactly. Roman is then pulled in for questioning since it was his voice the killer used to lure Sarah to the office.
So I love also that Sarah was messing around with his music video award at the office, dropped it, broke the head off of it. And so Roman's there holding it, and he goes, obviously, I'm next. And they're like, why would you say that? And he holds up the decapitated award. Obviously, this was a message.
Yes.
So I enjoyed that.
Yes, certainly. And I really just love, now that we know, because this is a fully spoiled podcast, we're about to talk about the ending, that he is the killer. I think that it was a very smart move of basically implicating himself from the get-go, but using like a burner phone or whatever, so he's able to, you know, because at the time I didn't think at first that it was going to be him.
No.
Until later when we found him dead off screen, because I was like, there's no way he would die off screen. Something's fishy there. But up until that point near the climax of the movie, I was like, it can't be him. He's already been cleared.
Now, yeah, that's obviously... They do a good job with this as well, where you're like, is it someone that we see here or is it somebody else? Because watching it, I was also thinking maybe it's someone we don't know, like that's not involved in this. And I know the rules of Scream are it's one of the going to be one of the actors, but this one felt a little different that maybe we don't know who the killer is.
Yes. Meanwhile, the killer uses Maureen's voice to call Sydney and demand she watches the news where they announce the new murder and the movie's production is canceled.
The call this time, and what Sid answered the phone the first time because nobody calls her landline except her father.
Yeah.
And she thought it was a work call. And it wasn't until halfway through the call, she looks down and realizes it rang on her landline to her home, not her work phone.
Yes. And I do love, though, that when Ghostface tells her, check on the news. And I'm like, what if she went to the wrong channel? Like, what if she flipped to the channel and they were just like, stocks are rising in New York?
Oh, my God.
God, oh my goodness.
I need to sell my Intel stock.
Exactly. Or like, you know, some other random person died in some other random state. She would have been like, and?
Yeah. And that.
But no, it's a movie. So the news channel, of course, is the news channel that he's looking for her to see.
Yeah. Or at least in The Craft, whenever they're gaslighting her at the end of the movie, they're like, turn on the news. It's on every station.
Yeah.
And they magically made it be on every station, but. So at least that one, they wrote it into the movie.
But I love that. I was like, because I'm pretty sure even by 2000, news was, you know, on multiple different channels.
It was, yeah.
Now, at Jennifer's home, they're having a rap party to commiserate how canceled it is.
My favorite sequence in the entire movie. This felt so new and so fresh and was so tense. Like, this whole thing of Jennifer's house in the Hollywood Hills scene will be one of my favorite sequences in any of the Scream movies. It's just so well done.
Well, then I'll let you take the lead on it, my love.
Okay. So they're having a woe is us, the movie is done party. And, you know, they're inside and Jennifer's drinking. Angelina's pouting. Tom is really drinking and tearing up the script. Gail crashes it, but she's there and she sees Jennifer and Dewey talking in the bedroom. And at first, Dewey's like, you know, there's really good things about Gail. And then he's like, but then she's also backstabbing and cutthroat. And Stone finds her and takes her inside. And that's when we find out that Maureen spent some time in L.A. in her late teens to early 20s. Stone is then patrolling the yard. And he's in Dewey's trailer, and he gets a call. And whose voice is it?
It's Dewey's voice.
It is Dewey's voice. And Stone, you know, they're talking back and forth, and Stone's like, oh, you know, I'm the professional, you know, maybe if you were better, you know, your sister wouldn't be dead. And he goes, why would you say that? It makes me so angry. And then Ghostface pops out in the trailer and stabs Stone. And you're like, oh, it wasn't Dewey. Oh, my goodness.
And yes, but I do love how, like, in that point, I was, like, rooting for him. Because I was like, Stone's such a dick that for making a comment like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we love Dewey's sister in the first one.
Yeah.
So he gets what's coming to him.
Yep. And Gail, with that information that Maureen Prescott was potentially in L.A., because they look at a headshot of Jennifer, and it is the same background as one of the photos that the killer left of Maureen, so they know that it was at Sunrise Studios. And, you know, they're starting to put some things together when the power goes off.
Yes.
And they all freak out, and then they are running outside, and then the phone rings, and they're all checking their cell phones, and it's the fax machine, and all of a sudden these pages are coming in, and it's a new script, you know, interior, Jennifer's home, who's going to be, is it Gail, da-da, 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 and they're like, go inside, go outside, and then the Tom runs in and goes, I have to know what it says, and so he's reading, and it says, the killer grants mercy to whoever. And then he can't read it, so he goes and he finds a lighter, and he clicks it, and he goes, smells the gas, and boom! The house explodes. People jump over the edge. We'd not had an explosion in the Scream movies before, so this was unexpected. It was exciting. Oh, my.
Yes. Now, after the explosion, Dewey's given the chance to go after Jennifer or Gail, because they're both in different directions, both yelling for him.
Dewey!
And he chooses Gail, because of course he does.
Yep.
But it's also a good thing, because Ghostface was just about to get her. She was about to be the third victim.
Yep.
Ghostface gets away, even though we see that he is shot in the chest multiple times. And just as Gail and Dewey kiss, Jennifer storms in and punches Dewey, so Gail punches Jennifer. And what does she say?
Jennifer says, my lawyer liked that. And Gail says, not as much as I did.
Yeah. Now Ghostface leaves behind another picture of Maureen that says, I killed her.
What?
Yes.
No. Stu Mocker and Billy Loomis killed Maureen Prescott. What is this?
Yes, it's a retcon.
Oh my goodness. And what is a retcon for our fans that are listening?
Well, they should go back and listen to our previous episodes where we jump into it and listen to them all. But a retcon is when you go back and you change something that you thought was true and you find out it was false or different.
Yep. And so I'm actually intrigued by this retcon, which we will go into more. But I'm okay with this added wrinkle because it adds to the mystery.
Yeah, and it's also, I'm okay with it because it's something that happened before Scream even started. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we saw someone kill her and then they were like, someone was like, no, that's not what happened. Like,
exactly.
This is easily changed because we did, and even in the climax of Scream, they didn't go too into the death other than saying, I killed your mom.
Because your mom was no Sharon Stone, Sid.
Exactly. So I'm down with it.
Yep.
So Kincaid is pressuring Dewey to track down Sydney just as Sid enters the police station.
So can we also acknowledge that a lot of the movie has happened without Sydney?
Yes.
She hasn't had very many scenes at this point and no group scenes. That's a lot of the movie and a lot of deaths to happen before she even shows up.
Well, don't worry. There's plenty of deaths to come. Meanwhile, they insinuate at the station that the killer found Sid's number was through Dewey's phone, which was only held by himself, and of course it's not him, and then two other people, Jennifer or Kincaid.
Yeah, so obviously there's just something about Patrick Dempsey's portrayal of Detective Kincaid in this. I immediately thought that he was one of the top suspects for this.
Oh yeah, they made him out to be one of the likeliest suspects from the very beginning, causing you to question him.
Now, I didn't think it was Jennifer. She may be, you know, an egotistical actress and stuff like that, but I definitely wasn't thinking her. I was thinking potentially Angelina.
Yeah.
I was thinking Kincaid. I was going, okay, in the first two Scream movies, there were two killers. So obviously there's going to be two this time.
Yep. And that's what I thought as well.
Who are they going to be and how are they connected? So at that point, you know, I'm always afraid they're going to be like, okay, this time Gail trying to find her fame is doing it. But I'm always like, no, Gail is not a killer. No, she may not. Be, you know, morally ambiguous sometimes on things, but she's not a murderer. And so my people that I was thinking of were Angelina and Kincaid, but I couldn't figure out a connection between them yet.
Yes, me either. Meanwhile, after this, Randy's little sister brings a video of Randy explaining the rules of the trilogy.
And I was glad to see Randy because, you know, in the first two movies where he took the time to explain, you know, the rules of a horror movie to survive or the rules of a sequel, it was nice to have him find a way for him to be back and bring about the rules of a horror trilogy. Is there such a thing?
Well, he explains that, you know, you're in a trilogy when lots of unexpected backstory and exposition. And I was like, yep, we're in a trilogy.
Yep.
Those two things are happening left and right with Maureen.
The killer is going to be superhuman in terms of strength. And also he says that you're pretty much going to have to cryogenically freeze them or decapitate them. And we've already seen that the killer can take a bullet and keep going.
Yes. He also warns you that anyone can die in a trilogy, including Sid.
That means you, Sid. And hey, the past will come back to bite you in the ass. The past is not at rest. And I think all of these are very true. Obviously, the past is coming back because of Maureen Prescott.
Yes.
Anyone can die, we're seeing, because of Cotton Weary already. And tons of backstory, killer superhuman. Yep, we are officially in a horror trilogy.
Yes, and one thing I like in the climax that originally was not in the alternate ending was in the climax where Sid gets shot. And, like, I remember in that moment being like, oh, no, she really did die.
Yeah.
And, like, it ends up she's wearing the bulletproof vest just like her brother. But, you know, at the time, like, I remember, like, in that moment, that first time I saw it, and she gets two shots to, like, the chest. And one was, like, upper chest. I was like, oh, no, she's gone.
Oh, and this was really, really well done. Now, the next section is one of my favorite comedy bits.
Yes, with Gail and Jennifer working together.
Yep, and so they're looking, they're going down into the records area of Sunshine Studios where they're going to run into Carrie Fisher. But before they go in, Jennifer goes off on this really great rant. No house, no bodyguard, no movie, and I'm being stalked. Because someone wants to kill me? No, because someone wants to kill you. So now, starting now, I go where you go. So that way, if someone wants to kill me, I'll be with you. And since they really want to kill you, they won't kill me, they'll kill you. Make sense?
Yes.
Not at all.
It makes sense to me.
And just her performance in this is really great. It is nice over the top. But they go downstairs and they go around a corner and they see Carrie Fisher. But it turns out it's not Carrie Fisher, babe.
It's Bianca Burnett.
And she looks like Carrie Fisher.
And she was even up for the role of Princess Leia. But who got the role? The one who slept with George Lucas.
Ooh, shade against herself.
Yes.
Bianca Burnett, because of, you know, never really going anywhere, knows all about all the forgotten actresses. And Gail tries to give her $50. And Jennifer's like, who do you work for? Woodsboro High. And she gives her, here's a ring. It's worth $2,000. You going to help Gail Weathers or not? And they find out that Maureen Prescott isn't the person they're looking for. They're looking for Rena Reynolds.
Yes. She back in the day, that was her stage name. And she worked on a couple horror movies and worked with John Milton.
So because John Milton, the horror producer doing the Stab movies, used to be John Milton, the horror director. So it's really interesting that in this third one, that there's kind of a Wes Craven character in the movie.
Yes, correct. And he not only reminds me of Wes Craven a little bit, but Harvey Weinstein. We'll get to that in a little bit, though.
Yeah.
Because first, Sydney runs into Angelina in the bathroom, which sets up like very similar to the bathroom stall scene from Scream 1 with the boots going up.
Yep. And this Sydney is different than Scream 1 Sydney because she kicked open the door.
Yeah.
And Angelina was all like, oh my goodness, you're Sydney Prescott. I'm sitting. There's the whole thing there. And, you know, I already told you my feelings about Angelina and Emily Mortimer, but I like to see the difference and growth in Sydney as a person between the first and the third movie.
Yes.
In the same situation.
I mean, you see her even more in that because she finds her way onto the Woodsboro movie set and the model of her bedroom, which is virtually identical to the one in real life.
Except that there's a poster for Creed on the fake wall. And there was a poster for the Indigo Girls in her real bedroom.
Okay. And she finally comes face to face with the killer and they have a little face off. What do you think of the face off?
It was really, really well done because a lot of the things that happened in the first face off with Ghostface in Scream 1 happened in this, where she's looking out the window and Ghostface comes out of the closet behind her, mm-hmm. which happened. Sydney goes up the stairs, happened in the first one. She threw things at them. Now, this time, there's a production cart that she's able to push after him. But there's even the section where her closet door opens and you can't open the bedroom door when the closet door is open. So that was really
a callback to the original.
That was neat how that was done. And then it all ends with her being haunted by her mother's voice under a bloody sheet.
Yes. And so I remember being like confused and frustrated that time because I wasn't sure whether that was the killer fucking with her the entire time or if she was also like literally hallucinating like she did in her nightmare.
Well, and I also kept wondering, like, there was so much with her mom and we hadn't seen proof that the killer could change the voice yet. And so, you know, I started even thinking, oh, my God. Is her mother alive? And what's going, like, I don't know. The way they did it, that confused me as well. But it was more of, like,
what's happening?
Yeah, what's going on?
Yes. Now, while after this, Gail, Jennifer, and Dewey confront John Milton, who admits that he knew Maureen Prescott.
Yep.
And that she was taken advantage of at one of his parties, saying, you want to get ahead in Hollywood? You got to play the game or go home.
She knew what she was doing and what she was in for. And unfortunately, things got out of hand. They don't say the R word, but she was raped. She was impregnated because of the rape. And that led her to leave Hollywood. Now, in the scene, you can see gorgeous lake behind him. But right outside of his window, there's a diving board.
Oh, I never noticed that.
Oh, it's one of my favorite details of the thing. And you know, he's a horror producer, but also it's one of those things where it kind of sets up, you know, if you fail and you're going to be run out of Hollywood, it'd be easier just to take a flying leap than it would to be a failure. And yeah. So that's kind of how I read it. But what else is this bringing up in terms of movies and things?
Well, this scene in particular, but the themes of Scream 3 really ended up being put under new scrutiny a couple years ago with everything that happened with Harvey Weinstein, because he is co-founder of Miramax,
yep,
which
with his
produced
brother.
All of these movies. Mm-hmm. So he had a big hand in the Scream movies.
Yep. I mean, he was responsible over the years for a lot of truly amazing films. Chicago the Musical, that won an Oscar. That was Miramax.
Yes. And yes, in October 2017, following sexual abuse allegations dating back to the late 70s, he was dismissed from his company, expelled from the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences. More than 80 women have made allegations against him.
And there are some, and you know, over the years, people will say, oh, you remember so-and-so actress? They were impressive. I wonder why we never saw anything more from them. And a good number of them are because Harvey Weinstein blackballed them in Hollywood because they wouldn't put out.
Yes. So that's gross. It's disgusting. I'm glad the Me Too movement happened, but it is interesting that you do see, like, I wonder, like, how much the creators of this movie, like even Wes Craven, were like aware of what was happening, or like it mirrors real life a little too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that they handled it delicately enough. I mean, with comments like, you know, you got to play the game or go home. It almost feels like they were.
And they, like, there's a comment later where they're like, oh, maybe Milton killed her. And somebody says, Milton's a creep or Milton's a perv, but he's not a killer. And I was like, I think he got off too easy with that generalization.
Yeah, I know we've talked about it. You can't judge old movies by today's standards. And I feel like that's kind of falls into it. But it is just also a little too similar not to acknowledge that there are definitely Harvey Weinstein feelings with John Milton in this movie.
100%.
Now, speaking of Milton, he's having a party. And what could possibly go wrong at this party?
Well, and we all know, thanks to the first Scream movie, the best way to end a movie is to get all of your main characters in the same place in a party atmosphere.
Yes, and so Sid and Kincaid are talking, and we see with like the horror movie posters all around the office and like the direction the conversation goes, the movie definitely wants us to think Kincaid is one of the killers.
Yep.
And then we switch to Gail, Jennifer, and Dewey driving, and they get a call from Sid.
Yep.
That she's heading to Milton's party. And they arrive, and various pairs split up to explore the house.
Yep.
Now, my question for you was, what party would, like, what kind of people would go to a party that they're invited to in a wealthy person's house just to go off and just explore their home willy-nilly?
And then I was like, babe, we did that.
Oh, no, it is me.
Yeah,
I was like, at first, like, how rude. And then you were like, we've done this before.
Yeah, we got invited to a party in 2014, and it was in a gorgeous home here in Manatee County.
A mansion.
It was a mansion, kind of looked like the one out of the TV show Revenge. And, you know, we found their screening room. Yeah. We found the gorgeous bathrooms. This, the outside area by the pool also had walking stones across a lagoon type of thing. Like, it was an impressive house, and we did explore every nook and cranny.
Yes.
But we weren't the only ones.
Touché, yes. Yeah. Now, Jennifer and Roman go to the basement with all the props from past movies.
And Jennifer, stop pretending I wasn't the best you ever had. Stop pretending I even remember. Stop pretending! She's fantastic. I love Parker Posey.
Yes. Meanwhile, Gail and Dewey find a cell phone with a device that lets the killer change their voice to anyone. They have Gail's voice. They have Dewey's voice. They have
all our voices.
All of their voices.
And which that finally answers the question for us, how they've been doing it.
Yes. Gail finds what appears to be a dead Roman in the freezer in the basement, although we didn't see it on screen. And that immediately raised red flags for me. What about you?
It did. And I was, but then the way they do it is, all of a sudden you're like, well, damn, the only person he was with was Jennifer.
Yes.
And are they trying, you know, right at the end to be like, maybe it was Jennifer, because they can't obviously show us having her kill him.
Yeah.
And so it gives you the question of, well, they were the only two together. So maybe it was.
And they answer that about 10 minutes later.
They do.
In the meantime, they go upstairs and tell Angelina what happened.
And she's getting out of here because
she didn't fuck that pig Milton just to only get
die without ever appearing in a movie. Yeah.
Yes. And as she's running away, she basically runs right into the knife.
Yep. And she's stabbed. And the two Gales see her being dragged away, and they scream, and they, you know,
Tyson starts yelling like, police, police. And if you want to get the killer to focus on you more than anyone else, number one way is to start yelling, police, police.
So he gets stabbed and thrown off the balcony.
Yes, and I honestly also don't, you know, stereotypically, black people aren't the first ones to call, police help, police help.
I think that at the moment that you're being stalked by a serial killer, I think any help is warranted at that point.
True, true. So he ends up, getting stabbed and then thrown off the second story, killing him before the killer then goes after Jennifer in the secret passage by the one-way mirror windows.
Yep, and Jennifer's like, you can't kill me! I was the killer in stab 3! But too late. and she's stabbed. And like, whenever I first watched the movie, because Gale and Dewey see the mirrors moving, and so he starts shooting at the mirrors. And the first time I saw it, I didn't realize he was shooting high on the mirrors because I was so intent on watching what was happening. And so he finally hits the mirror that Jennifer was behind and she falls out. And I was like, oh my God, he shot her. And it wasn't until subsequent viewings that I realized he's shooting the top where it was too tall for anybody. And she was just slumped against the mirror. And that's how she fell out.
Yes, it was. And so she is dead. Now Ghostface is about to kill real Gale.
But what about, what do you think of, what do you think?
And I also find it interesting that she was going to be the killer in step three, because it didn't earlier she say that she was the next victim?
Right. Which I guess they would have, been, you know, the easiest way to throw people off, Roman, is to have your character killed off. If you're dead, no one's going to be thinking you're the killer.
That is true.
What do you think of them making Gale be the killer in Stab 3? Do you think they lost the plot at that point?
I think that it's a joke of a movie anyway, so who's to say? I know you don't like the idea of her being a killer because you already shared in this that
yes.
it was just a bad idea. So I would say no, and I think you would agree.
Yeah. Gale's running, Ghostface catches up with her, and he grabs a hold of her and she kicks them and they both fall down the basement stairs where Ghostface is semi knocked out.
Yes. And
he wakes up just about as Dewey is to save, Gale, and he throws the knife. And as you see the knife flip through the air,
I was like, no, Dewey. Yeah. I was totally expecting it to go knife first into his forehead.
Oh, at that point, because, you know, we'd already been warned, no third act main character bloodbath.
Yes, exactly. But no, instead it was the butt end of the thing and it knocks him unconscious and he falls down the stairs, leaving him and Gale at Ghostface's mercy.
But what does Gale do whenever Ghostface is approaching? She puts her body in front of Dewey's to protect him from Ghostface.
Yes.
That says a lot about Gale and what she thinks of Dewey.
Yes. Now, Ghostface uses them as bait to lure Sid to the mansion, makes her use a metal detector, and makes her throw out a gun.
Into the pool.
And he's about to kill one of the three when Sid reveals she hit a second gun and shoots him multiple times in the chest again.
Yep. Five more times, and he falls down, and then Sid, thinking, oh, it's over, turns around, and Gale's looking. She's like, Sidney, he's gone.
Yes, and then right from where he disappeared appears Kincaid, being suspicious again.
And with a weird look on his face, and he has a gun pointed at her, and he's like, okay, Sidney, put down your gun, and he puts his hands up, and I'm like, oh, I don't trust him.
Yes, but moments later, Ghostface appears, and he actually takes a knife wound to protect Sid, and then Sid ends up using herself as bait to deter him away from the others.
Yeah, so at that point, the only characters we have in this movie that aren't involved right now are the other detective that was Kincaid's partner, who we had just seen a little bit ago, still at the station when they were like, where's Kincaid? And they're like, he left a while ago. So at this point, we don't have any suspects. Everybody's dead except for these four and the killer.
Yes. And Sid says, you know, you want me, come and get me, motherfucker.
Yeah.
She finds the hidden screening room where all the sex used to happen back in the 70s.
Yeah.
The killer locks her in and then monologues at her about how Maureen turned them away when they came to meet their mom, and reveals that he's Roman, her brother, and that he was the one who told Billy about Maureen's affair with his dad and helped train Billy on how to find a partner, how to kill Maureen, and then everyone in the first movie.
I mean, I'm a director. Directing is what I do.
Yes. And I do find that this is an interesting retcon. We kind of hinted at the idea of how the killer would have done it before, and I feel like this evens up. I mean, while he didn't physically kill Maureen, he did he was the one who orchestrated it, everything that happened in the first movie. So it doesn't really take away from any of the characters' motives or actions in the first one. Billy is still guilty of sin.
Yep.
You know,
it does make a little bit more sense because they're kind of dipshits.
Yeah.
So having someone that's a little bit smarter and more calculating be the mastermind puppeteer of it all makes more sense.
Yes. Now, what doesn't make sense, in my opinion, is that his plan is to pin the murders on her like she just went unhinged. Do you think that she would ever do that?
So,
or that people would believe it?
Well, if everybody's dead except for she and Roman, then yeah. Because at that point, there's no one to break his story. And as we saw in H40, Halloween 40 years later, the 2018 version, PTSD is a bitch. We saw what it did to Laurie Strode. Maybe they use this and be like, look, she's been stalked twice. She'd been living as the Unabomber in the hills. She finally snapped. Like, I could see it as a believable thing. And with nobody to refute the story, what are they going to do?
Yes, and so he takes Milton out from a hiding spot, very similar to how Billy did it with her dad from the first one. But this time he kills Milton right in front of her, saying he's already made the final cut.
Oh, he goes, you know, whatever you want, script approval, budget, final cut, I already have it.
Yes, they struggle, and he ultimately shoots Sydney. However, she took a page out of his book and is wearing a bulletproof vest she stole from the police station. And as I mentioned before, when I first saw her get shot, I was like, no.
Yeah. And it was one of those things where I was like, well, they told us the whole time it could happen. And I was like, are Dewey and Gale really going to be the survivors? Maybe this is the way that it's supposed to be. But are they going to survive if Sydney, the hero, Sydney, the victim, Sydney, the star dies? Who's going to save them from the killer?
Yes, but we find out she was wearing a bulletproof vest. She distracts him with a phone call before stabbing him twice, and then finally a third time in the chest.
Yep, and, you know, they make a joke about he wasn't superhuman. He wasn't superhuman at all. And then he jumps up, and Dewey starts shooting at him, and Sydney's like, head! Head, Dewey! Shoot him in the head! And Dewey takes a step forward with his right foot, turns the gun with one hand only, and boom, right between the eyes.
Yes, and he is dead.
Yep. And I'm good with that ending.
Yes. And so we find ourselves, flash forward to a couple weeks from now, Dewey is at the ranch, Sid's ranch, and asks Gale to sign her book for him. But surprise, the book was hollowed out and it's an engagement ring.
And she's like, you know, it didn't work out before. Like, what are we gonna, why would we try it this time?
And it's like the worst proposal ever in my book. He's like, I know it's not going to work. You know it's not going to work, but let's just try.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how would I have felt if when you proposed, you were like, this probably is going to be a garbage dumpster fire, but let's give it a go anyway.
Let's be garbage people together and just flame out.
Yes. No, but, you know, even though it's the worst lines, you do kind of believe their love at that time.
Yeah, I do. And you saw it. You saw during the movie that they still did care about each other a great deal, and that it was never about the love. It was about what they wanted out of life.
Yes. Sydney gets home from her walk, throws open the gates, doesn't lock the door, doesn't set the security, showing she has a sense of closure, and they are watching a movie with Detective Kincaid.
So, obviously, they were showing that there was some chemistry between the two, and he stuck around a little bit to maybe explore the chemistry with Sydney. What do you think of that?
I definitely think that they had sex after this movie.
Yeah, I do too. Now, what happened between Scream 3 and 4? Because obviously, it must not have worked out, because Sydney is alone in Signal and no mention of Kincaid by the time she's doing her book tour.
I can only imagine he went back to being his Hollywood detective job, and she just was not into that career or that life. Much the same way that Gale and Dewey tried and it didn't work out between 2 and 3. You know, they had 3 to bring them back together. They had nothing to kind of bring these two characters back together. So yeah. I'm assuming that's what happened.
I buy it.
Yes. You know what else I would buy?
I don't know, darling.
A sequel.
I would. How about 2 more sequels?
Or how about 3 if everything goes well with the Scream 5?
Oh, yes, please.
Yes. So we are all caught up. Be prepared after we do a month full of Christmas movies that we will be sure to revisit Scream 4 before we jump into Scream 5.
Oh, which I can't wait. January 22nd.
Exactly. And as I just mentioned, we are getting into a month full of Christmas movies. So this will be a lifetime of Christmas.
Oh, and I have a feeling that our good friend Ronnie Diamond may be joining us for a movie or two.
Oh, I can't wait. And if you can't wait either, let us know what you thought of this episode or what Christmas movies you hope we cover by emailing us at happylifepod@gmail.com.
You can always get involved with the conversation with everybody else on the socials, whether it is Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok, at Happy Life Pod.
And until next time, everyone, stay happy. You're still here, which is great, because there's something we probably forgot to mention this episode.
That is correct. Each episode, as we're discussing movies, music, and games, there's a good chance we've used a small clip or two from the original source material.
Yes, and those clips are not ours. We do not own the rights to any of the music or clips. They were used to help solicit a discussion to appreciate the original source material.
And with that, if you are still listening, you likely really appreciate our material as well.
I mean, how could you not? And if you've enjoyed this episode, then you should also ask yourself, when's the last time I told a friend to check out A Lifetime of Happiness?
If your answer was not today, well, it should be.
Yes, so go tell your best squirrel friend about our podcast today, and don't forget to subscribe or follow us wherever you're listening to get new episodes each Wednesday.
Stay happy.